I'm Shanae Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Blue Wire.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
New England sending QB Jimmy Garoppolo to 49ers.
We believe we found the right guy.
Garoppolo, quick pass, caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers. Kittle is gonna go. Touchdown.
Yeah, you heard it there. This is Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. The gentleman sitting right there across from me, it's Chris Biederman. He covers the 49ers for the Sacramento Bee. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers for NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. And as always, I say Chris is sitting right across from me. That's theater of the mind, folks. He's actually sitting in Santa Clara. I am at my home in the East Bay. We are not sitting across from one another. I guess we are virtually.
We are socially distanced.
We are. We also took part in a socially distanced activity over the weekend. We golfed together in my hometown, and that was long, but a lot of fun.
We played golf.
We golfed. We went golfing. There's a Twitter user whose name escapes me. Nice guy, but he corrected me on how to say we golfed, played golf, went golfing, played golfing. I don't know. I'm hoping I said the right one in there, though.
Yeah, I think playing golf is the right one. He was. I remember the tweet. The guy was against the idea of golfing as a verb. But No, we did, and we played the longest round in history, I think.
Ever.
It was almost 6 hours.
Yeah. That's what happens when you have three not so good golfers, and you're good. And then on top of that, it's a long course. And on top of that, there's some holes where the tee boxes are like 2.5 miles apart.
Right. I won't say I'm good. I appreciate you saying that, but I'm not. I'm like a... So what's annoying about golf is the more you get into it, the worse you feel about your game.
Even though you're getting better.
Yeah, like I'm getting significantly better. Like I've probably cut like 6 strokes off my handicap since like May. But it feels like when you want to get to that next level, they're like, oh, well, like I'm a 15 handicap. In the golf world, because I'm a weirdo who watches like golf videos on like how to get better and also on equipment, in that world, I'm like a mid handicapper, which sounds extremely mediocre, right? But when I go play with my friends who are just starting like you or, who are like 20 handicappers, like I'm noticeably better because I've been playing longer and I care about the game in a weird way. And then, but when I like watch videos and stuff, it's just it's a very humbling game, I guess. And there's a weird discussion about like, all the people who are super into golf, like the scratch guys, like if you're a mid-head handicapper, like you can't even like hang with them.
Right.
You know, like that type of thing. It's a weird sport, but it was fun. It was fun to finally play with you. Or no, we played before the season started, right?
Yeah, we played at Chabot. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we played at Lake Chabot.
Yeah.
That was a fun round too.
Yeah, it was a good time. So that's what Chris and I did. You guys were all super interested in that.
Yes.
I'm not good, and that's where we're going to stop. You know who else, it turns out, isn't very good? Maybe not at golf, I don't know. But at football, the New England Patriots.
Right.
You said on Thursday's pod that you did not think the Patriots looked very good against the Broncos. I chalked that up simply to, well, they didn't have a ton of practice time because they were dealing with all the COVID stuff. That loss to the Broncos is going to wake them up. They're going to play better against the 49ers. They did. They played worse. And
yeah,
it was jarring to see a Bill Belichick coach team look as bad as they did. I want to ask you, Chris, how much credit do you give the 49ers for making them look that bad, or are the Patriots just next level terrible?
I think the 49ers played well. They probably played better than they did in the Rams game, but it just looked a whole lot more lopsided because the Patriots were not any good on Sunday.
Right.
They don't have any skill position players right now. Julian Edelman is clearly Not the Julian Edelman that he used to be or is when he's healthy. N'Keal Harry, I don't know how good he is, but he got knocked out of the game with a head injury in the first, I think it was the first quarter. And it was just, it was clear that the Patriots offense just can't move the ball right now. And Cam Newton doesn't look anywhere near 100% to me. And I don't know if he is. I don't want to speculate on his health, but it just, you know, he didn't look good. I don't know if it's strictly because of the practice situation and all that, or if there are any lingering effects from the virus. I really hope not. So yeah, it was a great time to play the Patriots, right? Like, yeah. Which doesn't necessarily take away from the 49ers performance, because there were a lot of positives from it, obviously going to New England and winning a game, and the 49ers now being 4-3 after being 2-3 at one point, obviously a really good development for them in terms of, you know, bouncing back and being very much in the playoff race now. I think, you know, it was a convergence of two factors, right? It was a convergence of the Niners playing well, starting to hit their stride, sort of establish their identity. Win the line of scrimmage up front with the offensive line, which they weren't doing. And then the Patriots just really not looking good, and it looking like a lost season for them, which is surprising given how strong they looked early on.
Yeah, that's the craziest swing to me, is because coming out of week two, where the Patriots nearly knocked off the Seahawks in Seattle and looked really good doing it, it was like, man, that's going to be a really tough game on the Niners' schedule. They go Rams, and they got to go at the Patriots. And that just kind of shows how the ebbs and flows of a season can change what your schedule looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just not the same team on Sunday that we saw in that week two game against Seattle. It was... And I want to step away from the Patriots here for a minute. The 49ers dominated a team that played poorly, and maybe a bad team that played poorly. And that's what your good teams are supposed to do.
Right.
Had the Niners won that game 13-6, you know, that's probably an issue. But they dominated every single facet. And if you're San Francisco, it doesn't necessarily matter how good or bad the Patriots are. You're playing the teams that are on your schedule. And if you had told me that that's what the Patriots are going to look like, I would have said the Niners should be winning by 20 plus. And that's what they did. They took care of business. It was just very jarring as somebody, I'm 30 years old. So basically I've only known the NFL with the Patriots being this dominant Super Bowl contending force. And they did not look like that on Sunday.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think the takeaway too, like, the Patriots were bad, but the takeaway from the 49ers perspective, I think, is, you know, particularly on the offensive side, that's the identity sort of maximized right now, right? Like, given the injury situation, that's about as good as a game could go for them in terms of the formula that they want to use to win games. Run the ball 37 times for the second week in a row. You know, Kyle Shanahan has talked about 30 being sort of the number. If the Niners can get to 30 rushes in a game, they're going to have a really good chance of winning. And it's going to mean that usually the offense is playing pretty well. And Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, it was a good performance because he was mostly efficient. He had, you know, he had the bad interception in the first quarter. The second interception was pretty much meaningless, as that sort of Hail Mary heave to Brandon Ayuk to end the second quarter. Mm-hmm. But 20-25, 277 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. Niners did score four touchdowns in the game. And they only punted once, I believe, but,
right.
You know, Garoppolo going through the numbers of the game, and it's sort of indicative of what we've seen from Garoppolo all season, is that there's not a whole lot of downfield passing happening right now for Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, in the game he completed, do some quick math, he completed 8 of 9 behind the line of scrimmage. You know, he had 9 attempts on his 25 throws behind the line of scrimmage. Just 2 passes beyond 20 yards in the air, I mean, he finally completed one to Brandon Ayuk. He hadn't had one coming into this game. So it was, you know, you still, there, those questions remain. I think like the health of Jimmy Garoppolo's ankle seems like less of an issue as time goes on, which is obviously a good thing. And I think Kyle Shanahan certainly understands that the best spot to put Jimmy Garoppolo in right now is to keep everything short, whether it's behind the line of scrimmage or, you know, within 10 yards, just about. He's not pushing off towards the sideline. He threw five between 10 and 20 yards, or I guess beyond 10 yards. He completed four or five in the middle of the field and just one of one to the left of the numbers and one of one to the right of the numbers. Like, Kyle Shanahan isn't asking him to push off and make those longer throws towards the sideline, probably because of that ankle. So, you know, I'm curious to see what a version of Jimmy Garoppolo looks like when the running game isn't going. Or maybe the 49ers are just at a point now where the running game is going to go, whether that's by way of the offensive line looking really good in conjunction with Kyle Shanahan coming in with a really good game plan and a lot of interesting play designs. It seems like the 49ers run 10 plays, but they run them out of like 50 different formations.
Yeah. Split, you know, beers like Novocaine. Give it time, always works.
Yeah. It's like, there are 20 different ways to run that Deebo Samuel little shovel pass thing. And we'll talk about those injuries too.
The play they ran yesterday, I think it was in the first quarter, they ran that action where Samuel comes in front of Garoppolo and Garoppolo will shovel pass it to him. Only they faked the shovel pass, and then Garoppolo went play action to Jeff Wilson, who was standing on his right, and Samuel motioned right to left. So they faked the Samuel little pitch, shovel pass, and then went play action to Jeff Wilson, and then threw it back to Samuel on the left side. Like, that's just an iteration of that play.
Right, exactly. Like, incredible. That, and Tony Romo said it during the game, like, for everything that the 49ers do, they have a counteraction to it if you react, right? Which is obviously one of the things that makes Kyle Shanahan's offenses so difficult to defend. But, you know, the same question remains about what happens when the 49ers defense is not playing really well, and maybe that game's going to come, you know, this upcoming game against the Seahawks, against Russell Wilson.
I have a quick question for you real quick while we're on the Garoppolo topic.
Yeah.
Was he good?
He was good enough. I mean, 20 to 25 is good. He was good. He wasn't asked to do a whole lot, which was fine because the 49ers wanted to run the ball.
The one interception was bad. The other one was an arm punt at the end of the half. So call it one interception if you want. Like, you're grading this game.
So,
we love grades, Chris.
I know. I'd give Jimmy Garoppolo a B+. Okay. He executed the game.
That's what Daryl the Guru Johnson gave him, by the way. So you and Guru are on the same wavelength.
All right.
Keep going.
Me and Goo. Your guy Goo.
Yeah, the Goo.
I think Jimmy Garoppolo is not being asked to push the ball down the field a whole lot. And maybe that's because of his ankle, but I also think there's something to the idea of the 49ers receivers not necessarily being in a spot where Kyle Shanahan feels comfortable having them run a bunch of deep routes. And I asked him about that today because, you know, we saw it last year with Deebo Samuel. Samuel played a lot in the first half of the season, but he was really kind of a gadget player. Like, he wasn't running a full route tree. He was, you know, Kyle Shanahan was getting the ball in his hands through, you know, bubble screens and these running plays. And different ways like that. And it's smart because Deebo Samuel's really good with the ball in his hands. And if you're a play designer like Kyle Shanahan, who's so good at getting blockers in the right position, then you can maximize a player who might not be super adept at route running and beating man-to-man coverage against really good NFL corners. So I think there's an element to that. And Kyle Shanahan basically said as much today, like, you know, it's kind of a bonus when you're waiting on these guys to develop their route running skills. It's not like they don't have use on the football field. You can still play them, but you just have to kind of change your scheme in terms of the way you get them the ball. And then, you know, like, we've seen it with Brandon Ayuk. We've seen him, in games before this one, be the guy who can be really nasty in screens, or the reverse runs, whatever. And then he comes out on Sunday and has, you know, 115 yard performance, and he's making catches downfield. That's, that has to be a really encouraging development for Kyle Shanahan. And that, I think as much as we get wrapped up in Jimmy Garoppolo and him not pushing the ball downfield, I think a lot of that too has to do with the receivers and the fact that they're young. And Kyle Shanahan is still trying to figure out what their strengths are in terms of those things. And he did, and it sounded like he said that about Deebo Samuel specifically. Like, he mentioned both Ayuk and Samuel. So Samuel might be a little bit more raw when it comes to some of that downfield stuff, which is interesting and notable because, like, Emmanuel Sanders last year was that downfield guy. He sort of gave the 49ers balance. And I don't know if they have that right now outside of George Kittle.
Kendrick Bourne?
I mean, occasionally, but, you know, Bourne.
Is he their best route runner?
Oh, best route runner? Jeez, that's a good question. 49ers best route runner at the moment.
Well, you figure that out. I want to say a thing.
Okay, say
Brandon Ayuk. At first, I was chalking it up to Deebo Samuel coming back from injury and stuff, but Brandon Ayuk outsnapped Deebo Samuel yesterday for the third consecutive game.
Yeah,
and even if Deebo missed 8 snaps, he got hurt, and then the Niners played 8 more offensive snaps. So even if he played all of those, Ayuk still would have outsnapped him.
It makes sense. I mean, Ayuk had much more of a training camp. You know, he did get hurt, but he was out there for, and he was able to do a lot more training and stuff over the summer. So that's not entirely surprising. But the point's taken that Ayuk might be more versatile than Samuel right now. But now the 49ers are going to have to figure things out without Samuel. And we'll talk about that a little bit more on Thursday, but we should say that Deebo Samuel is going to miss at least 2 games with that hamstring injury.
Oh yeah. News.
And Jeff Wilson Jr., the guy who we should probably talk about next, he had 17 carries, 112 yards, 3 touchdowns. On his 3rd touchdown, suffered a high ankle sprain. And Kyle Shanahan said Monday that that would be a month out for him, which is a tough break because, as I texted you and Nick in the group chat today, like, waking up Sunday morning, I did not expect to Monday afternoon to be getting an outpouring of oh man, that's terrible. He had such an awesome game about a Jeff Wilson Jr. injury.
Yeah, like, right? Jeff Wilson Jr. just missed a game with an injury and nobody blinked.
Right. And
then
he was
awesome on Sunday.
Yeah, really good.
And the incredible thing about Jeff Wilson is going into the game, he was averaging 2.4 yards a carry this year.
Yeah.
And just didn't look like, I mean, he looked like just a short yardage back. I mean, not a ton of wiggle. He was just going to plow into people and hope for the best. And it looked a little bit like that in the first quarter. In the first quarter, he had 6 carries for 15 yards and a touchdown. And that wasn't going to cut it if he was going to keep averaging 2.5 yards a carry. And then over his last 11, he went for 97 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, he just turned into a different guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, that makes his injury, like, it's a formerly undrafted NFL player kind of seemingly figuring it out on the fly. And then he gets hurt.
And
that's just brutal.
He was running over dudes.
Yes. Like, he was there. There was nothing he did yesterday where I was like, oh man, he left yards on the field.
Right, right. He maximized everything he got. George Kittle after the game said, you know, Jeff Wilson. Oh, George Kittle, who was on the pod last week, by the way. If you haven't listened to that, you should go listen.
He's not on the pod today.
Not on the pod tonight, but he did stop ducking it for 1 week and went on last week. So if you haven't seen that, check your feeds and listen to it. It was a fun conversation.
And is still nice enough to answer your questions in press conferences.
Barely.
Good guy.
Barely. I'm just kidding.
Good guy, George Kittle.
George Kittle said one thing that he loves about Jeff Wilson Jr. is he goes to a dark place before games. And Kyle Shanahan was saying today that, like, he can't even talk to Jeff Wilson Jr. during games because he's in that headspace.
Weird.
and so it's just one of those things. I mean, you can see it like in that game-winning touchdown he scored in November against the Cardinals last year. You remember him crossing the goal line and just like completely losing control of his body. He was so excited, just like screaming and like waving his arms around. Like, he's just one of those people that gets locked in and like just a completely different mode. Like, I'm going to run through everybody's face right now. Like, that's the mindset that he has. And that's how he played. And to me too, like, man, if Jeff Wilson, if that's going to be the Jeff Wilson Jr. the 49ers have for the rest of the season, when he does come back healthy, which is a pretty big if, obviously, on an ankle injury.
Yeah.
But if you pair him with Raheem Mostert and do like sort of this thunder and lightning thing, which is a terrible running back football cliche, but like
really bad, dude. Like,
yeah,
I thought maybe you'd think about that beforehand.
But the way those dudes could potentially complement each other, and the fact that you probably don't want either of them being like a 20 carry guy going forward, if you split the carries between those guys and had Jerick McKinnon as your third down pass catching back, I think you're going to be in a really good spot.
Yeah, I agree.
The problem is it's going to be a long time before you get to that spot.
Because yeah, but if they get there, and we're looking at like you said, like 4, 5, 6 weeks, if they get there, they're going to be getting there just in time for like a late season run and a potential postseason run.
Yeah, I mean, if the 49ers get there, they're going to be a tough out, man.
That it's just a matter of getting there. It appears that this season is going to be a war of attrition for them.
Yeah, I mean that. Kyle Shanahan said today, he was asked by Cam Inman if he had been thinking about the playoffs now that, you know, looking at the standings and, you know, you play 7 games and the playoff picture is starting to sort of identify itself, I guess.
Take shape.
There you go. That's a way better way to put it.
I'm a writer, so.
You definitely are. I pretend to be. Shanahan said no, he doesn't think about it at all. But there's no doubt in my mind that Shanahan has looked at the NFC East and been like, man, if we can be a wild card team that their first game is against an NFC East team,
I'm fascinated.
That would be huge for any, no matter what team it is. And it looks like it's probably going to be an NFC West team that is that in that wild card spot.
I am fascinated to watch the like race for the 7 seed.
Yeah.
And see if we do see like the 6 seed lose a couple games on purpose or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, if it's the difference between going to freaking Tampa Bay or Philadelphia.
Yeah. Right. And
who's not taking Philly in that situation? Anyways.
Yeah.
He's definitely given it like he's mapped it out.
He's thought about it. You're a head coach of a pro football team that's worth billions of dollars. There's no way you don't think about it.
You were just on a cross-country flight with no satellite TV.
Right, right. But, you know, you don't say it publicly. But, like, he knows exactly. I mean, he's a smart guy. He probably knows what every team's record is right now.
Yeah.
Or at least at, like, all the teams that matter, the top 10.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the defense?
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about the defense.
Are we impressed with the defense or not?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Why?
I think that what Robert Saleh and the 49ers defensive coaching staff has done, and credit to the players as well for executing, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. But they were a team that was built front to back. They had the worst pass defense in the league in 2018. And then they added D Ford, they added Nick Bosa, they kept the exact same secondary and had a top 3 defense in the league. And now they've lost D Ford for a considerable amount of time. They've lost Nick Bosa for the season. And they've lost multiple other edge rushers in the process. And they've now constructed their defense from back to front. You have Jason Verrett playing extremely well. Emmanuel Mosley's back in the lineup. He's playing well. Tavarius Moore was excellent yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. Marcel Harris didn't have any major gaffes and was doing what he does, sticking his nose in the run game. against a team that was running the ball very effectively. Like, what they've been able to do without the cornerstone of their defense has been super impressive, because it would have been totally understandable if they completely fell apart, and they haven't.
I agree. I do think that's been impressive, and the numbers back it up. I think the 49ers are still statistically in a really good spot. They're 6th in scoring, 5th in overall defense. That said, you know, we pointed out a lot, but there are some games where they haven't gone against a good offense. And I do think that this is another one of those games that qualifies. And that's not to take anything away from them, but, you know, like,
I don't think they're going to give up 9 points a game, Chris.
Yeah, I don't think so either. just looking at the Patriots skill guys, man, like, it's bad.
They had, so we do a bit. I produce a radio show. I don't talk about it often, but I produce a radio show on 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area, and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's Tiny Guru and Dibs. Anyways, we do a bit on Fridays where I give over-unders. Like, I set the over-unders, and the guys pick them. And I had Patriots wide receivers at 11.5 receptions, which I was like, man, that's not very many. They had seven catches by wide receivers, 3 by one guy. That's hard to do.
Do you know, because I just had to look this up to double check. Do you know the first name of the leading pass catcher from the Patriots on Sunday?
I believe his name is Jacoby Myers.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
I had to look up the J because in my head, I was like, is it Jacob?
I think it's Jacoby Myers. Jacoby.
Yeah, you're right. It is Jacoby.
And then there's a...
spelled with an I.
Yes, J-A-K-O-B-I.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know why I knew that. That's weird.
I mean, most NFL players who are catching passes on good teams, I feel like I know their names.
Yeah, right.
Like Jacoby Myers, I know now because I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Because I was unsure after watching him play football.
Remember when Travis Fulgham had that touchdown that beat the Niners? It's like, right. Who the heck is Travis Fulgham? The Patriots are like that, but the whole offense.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree.
Just they're tight ends. One of the callers on WEEI in Boston today, they posted a pretty funny video of all their pissed off callers. And one guy was like, we can't celebrate National Tight Ends Day because we don't have one. And they don't. Like, they just, they don't. They don't. And I don't know how a guy like Bill Belichick, who's been so good at personnel for so long, lets his roster get like this.
Yeah, it's really odd. I mean, the game was essentially
won in the
first
half. But the Niners
dominated.
Like, that's what, yeah. That's kind of what I was, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. Like, the Niners defense isn't going to give up 6 points every week, and they're not going to have 4 interceptions every week. Like, that's goes without saying. But I do think that when they are, even this iteration of what they are, I think they can go into Seattle and play well enough to put the offense in a position to win. Like, I don't think it's a given that Seattle's going to go rack up 50 points.
Right. I think the defense is playing at a high level, and like, you only play your opponent in front of you. So I'm not trying to like completely dismiss what they're doing. Just looking at the first half numbers, total net yards, 301 for the 49ers and 59 for the Patriots.
Oh my God.
Cam Newton was their leading rusher in the first half, 3 runs for 12 yards. And he completed 4 of 8.
Man.
And it was just odd. But no, on the 49ers defense, like, I think the most encouraging thing about it right now is the play of their cornerbacks.
Yes.
Because ultimately what a pass rush does is makes life easier on your cornerbacks if your cornerbacks aren't elite. And if you happen to have really good cornerback play with a really good pass rush, then you're just going to be a really tough team to beat. And that's what the 49ers were last year.
Yeah.
But if they didn't have an elite pass rush, then you wonder if who was ever on the opposite side of the field from Richard Sherman would have gotten exposed more, whether that was Emmanuel Moseley or Akella Witherspoon.
Sure.
But now you're getting, you know, I don't know that Jason Verrett is playing at Richard Sherman's level, but the production is pretty similar.
Yeah.
Just based on the fact that nobody's targeting him. And
he's been at worst a quality starter.
Right. No, he's been really good. I think he's been more than that. I think he's been really good.
I think so too, yeah.
And I think you're getting, with Emmanuel Moseley now, I think he's playing better than he was last year. So your point about them sort of being a back-to-front defense now is a good one. And I think if they get that kind of cornerback play that they've gotten the last 2 weeks, and the reason why I'm encouraged is more about the Rams game, to be honest, about the cornerback play.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you get really good cornerback play just within the framework of this defense, I think you're going to be in a good spot. And I think that's a different, that like, that's the reason why the 49ers haven't gotten gashed in the passing game, on top of just not playing very good offenses right now.
We saw it after the Dolphins game. There were people online, people calling into local radio saying, you know, blaming the scheme, blaming Saleh's scheme. And it's like, no, Saleh's scheme is great when you have players who can execute it.
Right.
And I think the Niners have that right now. Can they go back to the Super Bowl? I need to see more. Like, good performance against the Rams, really good performance against the Patriots, but they have to stack up more of those for me to be confident that they can go and pull off some kind of epic run despite all the injuries.
Yeah, put it this way. What's surprising to me right now, and this was another thing I texted you guys, but like, I think the Achilles heel of the team right now is Jimmy Garoppolo, more so than the defense. Given that the defense is really sound, they're getting really good cornerback play. They might not be pressuring the quarterback at a crazy rate like they were last year, but I'm less worried about the defense than I am about Garoppolo. And it's not that I don't think Garoppolo is good, or, you know, they need to move on from him next year or anything like that. I just think right now, this version of Garoppolo in the passing game on that ankle, which probably isn't 100%, and with Kyle Shanahan not being eager to push the ball downfield, I just think that if the 49ers, if this is what they have to, okay, I'm putting the cart before the horse, but if they get to the playoffs and the defense is playing at this level, it's going to be up to Jimmy Garoppolo to win a game with his arm. And I'm less confident that he can do that than I would be the 49ers get a good defensive performance, a good enough defensive performance to win a playoff game. Does that make sense? Like, I'm more confident absolutely. In the defense right now than I am in Jimmy Garoppolo. And a lot of that has to do with the ankle injury still.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. Let's hit a break and then we'll get some good game, bad game.
Okay. Even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire, BLUEWIRE. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Hey, football is back in full swing, and you might not be at a game this year, but my computer screen just went down. So I'm going to stall and tell you that BetOnline is the only place that I wager on sports. One of my favorite things to do is the custom player props. You can go in there, and let's say that you don't like maybe the number that that has been set. You can knock it down. Maybe it's Jimmy Garoppolo passing yards. Is it 240? You wanted it 250. You can knock that number up and it changes the odds for you. It's all great. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every single day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. And don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Your cat enjoyed that ad read, I think.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. I am just in a whirlwind of difficulty right now because I have my cats that won't shut up, and you're going to hear it throughout the pod, so you're welcome. That's brought to you by Stephen Purry. and then my computer screen out of nowhere just turned black, and I'm like moving my mouse around and stuff, and it's not coming back up. So I will not have a computer screen for the duration of the pod, so don't ask me any questions.
All right. Well, we're going to play good game, bad game, and I'll play host then. So good game for Jeff Wilson Jr. And as we mentioned, 12 carries, 112 yards, three touchdowns.
It was 17 carries.
17 carries. My apologies. First of all, we didn't expect him to start, right? I mean, he entered the weekend as questionable to play because of that calf injury. Kyle Shanahan sort of undersold what Wilson's role would be during the week last week, saying, you know, he's questionable to play. We'll see how much he practices, blah, blah, blah. I think everybody thought it would be a Jerick McKinnon, Jamichael Hasty game while Wilson was working back, and Wilson got the start. It wasn't even like he was... rotated into the game. He was a starter, and part of that was because Kyle Shanahan wanted to take some of the workload away from Jerick McKinnon. And it proved to be the right call. It was wildly effective, 112 yards in two and a half quarters, basically. I think that's a sign of good coaching, good scouting. This is an undrafted running back. I don't know if you've heard, Kyle, but the 49ers have been good at identifying running backs.
Get out of town.
And Jeff Wilson Jr. is one of them. Jamichael Hasty adding 57 yards on nine carries, by the way.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about Jeff Wilson Jr. being the guy to go off?
Sure.
Was all the pissed off fantasy football players.
Right.
Who started Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty.
Right.
And I saw someone, this is an aside, and if you're not on Twitter, somebody was yelling at Tim Kawakami on Twitter for not knowing that Jeff Wilson Jr. was going to be the starter and getting a bulk of the carries.
He was blaming the beat writers for not getting that information from Kyle Shanahan.
You got to hold him down.
Yeah.
Beat it out of him if you have to.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan.
That's why you're called a beat writer.
Right. It was, I sent Tim a picture of a transcript asking the very same question with Shanahan not saying anything helpful.
Yeah,
we try really hard to get as much information as we can from the coaches, and they know exactly what they want to tell us and what they don't want to tell us.
A pro tip, unless it's Raheem Mostert, just leave that Niners running back on your bench unless you're trying to swing for a home run.
Yeah. But yeah, good game, Jeff Wilson Jr.
Bad game,
Trent Taylor. And this isn't because Trent Taylor played poorly.
Yeah, elaborate, please.
It was a bad game for Trent Taylor because he played just three snaps, which speaks to maybe a larger issue in that, you know, Trent Taylor was somebody who in training camp in 2019, Kyle Shanahan said was the team's best offensive player throughout training camp. And then he had the Jones fracture in his foot. It got infected after his surgery. It required five surgeries total. He missed the entire season. So Trent Taylor went from being the 49ers, quote unquote, best offensive player in training camp to now being kind of an afterthought on a team that needs receivers, right? Like a team that there is a vacuum of opportunity for receivers, because like I mentioned earlier, there might not be like a whole lot of downfield stuff happening because Kyle Shanahan doesn't necessarily trust those guys to make those kinds of plays on a consistent basis yet. Well, Trent Taylor doing what he did maybe in 2017, which feels forever ago now, in being that sort of really reliable middle of the field passing game as an extension of the running game type guy. The fact that he's only getting three snaps now is a little bit worrisome. And with Deebo Samuel being out, Taylor's certainly going to have an opportunity to get more playing time. And if he doesn't, then you have to wonder, you know, is Trent Taylor going to provide the 49ers much of anything this year? And given that this is the last year of his contract, is Trent Taylor going to be with the 49ers beyond this season? I think it's fair to ask. And I also think there's a good chance that Taylor gets his legs under him more. Obviously, missing a full season with an injury is problematic. In 2018, he missed a lot of time with a back injury. So he's, you know, a 5'8 player who's dealt with a couple of significant injuries now. And so I think, but I do think there's an opportunity for him to get a lot of playing time here coming up. And I point out him having a bad game is just kind of a bad sign, I guess. And, you know, it's just 1 week, maybe that changes, but it's not a great look for somebody like Trent Taylor, who's proven it in the past to not be getting that run right now. When the 49ers could probably use him.
I keep waiting for this Trent Taylor, like 10 catch, 120 yard game where the defense just doesn't have an answer for him. And it's just becoming more and more evident it's not coming.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had, what'd you say, three snaps?
Three.
That's in a blowout. Like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, is like what the 49ers are doing now. I mean, a lot of it, too, is a game plan thing, right? Because their two receivers are threats in the running game that we've talked about so much, like on these sweeps and bubble screens and all of that. Trent Taylor's not that player right now. And when you're using a fullback, as often as the 49ers are, you're not going to use that third receiver. That third receiver is probably Kendrick Bourne anyway. So it's easy to see the roadmap to Trent Taylor only getting three snaps. But it's problematic because at some point you need Trent Taylor to sort of be good enough to be in the game, maybe regardless of game plan, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that happens a little later on, but...
Well, and especially with what you were talking about earlier with where Garoppolo is most effective.
Right, exactly.
Like, you have a guy who gets open in... Well, it's supposed to be able to get open in a phone booth, as they say. In the middle of the field, where Jimmy Garoppolo is really good.
Yeah. Yep.
Free Trent Taylor.
Speaking of receiver,
Trent Taylor.
Free Trent Taylor. Speaking of receivers, good game, Brandon Ayuk. Career high, 115 yards. He's just, like, there were a couple plays.
He's good, dude.
Yeah, there were a couple plays where you're like, all right, like, this dude with the ball in his hands especially is a real problem. And in training camp, he showed signs of that. There was about a week of camp where he was playing really well, and I thought he was far and away the 49ers' best receiver. And I think we're starting to see some of that right now. And as we said, Sunday was the first time that he was really starting to open things up down the field. And if he can be the dude who's really nasty in the design running plays and the bubble screens and all that, and be really good down the field, like, this dude, like, could potentially be a star in this offense. And he's off to a really promising start, in my opinion.
The first catch he had, I think it was the first catch he had, it was, like, 3rd and 16. And he caught it a couple yards short of the sticks. And just kind of with ease shook through a couple guys and then ran through a guy and got 19 yards. And you said it, that he just does everything that a receiver needs to be able to do to be successful in this offense. And, you know, we've heard of how great Trent Taylor is in camp. We've heard Jalen Hurd looks awesome in camp. We've heard Dante Pettis looks really good in camp. And this year, Brandon Ayuk looked great in camp, according to all the reports from there. I think you talked about it on this podcast, actually. And He is. He's a really good player.
He's got a lot of juice. Like the ball in his hands, if he's running full speed and has blockers in front of him, like he's got juice. And it's a different kind of juice because like Deebo Samuel just wants to run through everybody, right? Like he's gonna be north and south, put his foot in the ground, not really dance a whole lot. And Ayuk is more of a glider and will like has a little bit more I don't even know how to describe it, but just seems like he's a different type of player than Samuel. Maybe not quite as physical, but maybe a little faster and more elusive, particularly in the open field. And I just think in this offense, I think he could be really, really good. But the question will be, is it going to be good enough for the 49ers to make a run this year? Or is it something where he's going to be like a real, you know, I don't know about like number one receiver. I know that's a debate people have. But I don't think he'll get anywhere near that this year. So, but like, what's the level that he gets to and how much does he help the offense this year? Because he's clearly the 49ers like third or fourth most important offensive player right now.
Yeah. And Deebo Samuel last year, you'll remember, didn't have a 100-yard receiving game until week 10 against the Seahawks. And that was a game when George Kittle didn't play and Emmanuel Sanders left early with his rib injury.
Right.
And that's what it took for Deebo to get to 100 yards. And Ayuk did it in week 7 without a full training camp.
Yeah.
And if he's going to continue, like if he has the same trajectory that Deebo Samuel had in his rookie year, he's going to be incredible by week 12, 13.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see what his growth looks like over the next 4 or 5 weeks to see if like we're just kind of seeing what he is right away or if there's another level for him to go as a rookie.
Yep.
Who else is bad?
Bad game, pass rush.
Yeah. I want to throw a question out at you.
Go for it.
I didn't think the pass rush was like terrible, but they did a good job of keeping the running lanes for Cam Newton to a minimum. And I'm not certain if that was on purpose or if their pass rush just isn't getting around the corner rapidly.
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's easier to contain a mobile quarterback if you're not beating your blocker up the field, right?
Right.
So I definitely think they're mindful of it. Like Robert Saleh talked about how much of a focus it was last week. And the 49ers staying in their rushing lanes has been a major focus. So I do think they're doing a really good job at that.
Right.
But against somebody like Russell Wilson, or against a better quarterback who could carve you up with really good offensive weapons, I wonder if the pass rush is at some point is going to be a liability. And I also wonder if there's regression coming from the 49ers cornerbacks as positive as I am about the 49ers corners. Like I wonder about its sustainability. Like, is this something, you know, we're going to get from Jason Verrett and Emmanuel Mosley all season until Richard Sherman comes back? Or is this just something that's happening right now? I'm curious to see that. But just overall, I mean, the 49ers, their 12 sacks through 7 games ranks 22nd in the league. You know, their pressure percentage, actually have a pretty good pressure percentage. According to Pro Football Reference, it's at 24.5, and I think that's 8th in the league. So that's good, but I'm, you know, it wasn't a game where it was like, man, the pass rush is overwhelming. The defensive line played well, while the pass rush wasn't overwhelming. Those two things can be true, right? I feel like those two things can be true. So I do like your point, though, that the pass rush being what it is right now and not having dudes that are winning their winning their matchups and getting upfield. Obviously, a mobile quarterback can just run past those guys sometimes.
It would just be really funny if the 49ers backed into a way of slowing down Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray by just having a worse pass rush or a less effective pass rush. It would be
a
really perfect way for the 2020 season to go. I have a computer screen back, by the way.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah, man.
Less pressure on me.
You're doing great.
And just for your computer's sake, I know how I had computer issues over the summer. It was not an enjoyable time in my life.
Your boy's not in a spot where he can just slam down for a new computer. So
right. Pretty important device.
Hoping this one hangs in there.
Good game. Kyle Juszczyk.
I'm going to amend this. Great game.
Great game, Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah.
He was it felt like every block he threw was good. And he was used on so many different kinds of plays.
Yes.
And he had that block of Stephon Gilmore that led to the long, I think it was a Jamichael Hasty run.
Mm-hmm.
Where he cut Gilmore and then was like laughing with Gilmore about it.
there's a great photo in the USA Today database of Juszczyk. He's on his stomach after throwing the block, and Gilmore is completely in the air, both legs like up in the air, and Hasty just running by them. It's a great, great shot.
He's a very valuable player to their offense.
Jamichael Hasty?
Kyle Juszczyk.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
You saw it yesterday. Tony Romo wouldn't stop talking about it.
Yes. Despite having an albatross of a contract.
I knew you were going to do that. One of the things that happened yesterday online these are just silly things I noticed. So Kyle Juszczyk had an awesome block coming left to right where I forget who was even running it, but he just wiped out whoever the edge player was. I just took him out of the screen. And Ronald Blair tweeted about that block. It was like, okay, Juice, or come on, Juice, or something like that. And he tweeted that right about the time Juszczyk dropped a throw on the next play.
Mm.
And so everybody thought he was tweeting about Juszczyk dropping it. So he then had to send another tweet clarifying that he was talking about the awesome block. And I thought that was great. I thought that was a great Twitter thing to happen during the game.
And Ronald Blair's probably the last guy on the team who would ever tweet something critical on purpose of a teammate.
Ronald Blair is going to get into coaching and be really good at it.
Yes. Ronald Blair is an excellent human.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
He came on my radio show because some guys have their DMs open, and I will just say like, hey, I'm producer, do this show, love to have you on. He was like, yeah, sure. What time? Oh, okay. Awesome.
Nicest dude in the world.
Kyle Juszczyk. Awesome yesterday.
Yeah. Really good. Scored a touchdown. Just
first
really
one
good
since
player.
The Super Bowl, right?
No, he had one a couple weeks ago. Dolphins game? Yeah, it was the second one of the season. I think he had one against the Dolphins.
He had a receiving touchdown.
I don't remember.
I don't either. Let's get to our last one.
Bad game, Jamar Taylor. And that's a crazy thought because he had two interceptions and played well. But it's a bad game we wrote down in our rundown here because it's our last chance to talk to him it's our last chance to talk about him because Kaywan Williams is probably going to come back this week. And Jamar Taylor has been a pretty pleasant surprise in my opinion, because I watched him in training camp and thought, man, 49ers would be in much better shape to get Kaywan Williams healthy because Jamar Taylor is probably a weak link in the secondary, and he's played really well, and he deserves credit for that. And I don't think we've talked about him all that much for doing that. So that's why he got listed as in the bad game category, mostly because we just won't be able to talk to him going forward.
He was good. He had two interceptions. Good for Jamar Taylor.
I'm looking up his Pro Football Focus numbers because I want to see if his numbers are good.
Okay.
62.8 passer rating when targeted. Very good. Yeah. Jamar Taylor.
Yeah. He was
former Boise State Bronco, I learned.
Could have been disastrous, yep. Especially against the Rams, and he was not.
Yep.
That's great.
I went on 95.7 the game in a pregame radio spot and said I thought Cooper Kupp could have like 10 catches against Jamar Taylor, and he had what, like one or something?
Yikes. Yeah. Tough scene.
Yep. I'm a professional at this. DeMontre Moore, most valuable player award goes to who you got?
I'm taking the easy one. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have you go second, and I'm taking the easy one from you. Jeff Wilson Jr., 3 touchdowns on the ground. Just a really, really excellent performance from him in a game where he was questionable going in. He ends up getting 17 carries and showed a level of kind of vision and burst and wiggle that I did not know he had. And he did all of that without sacrificing the power that he kind of built his game on, especially last year as a short yardage back. So I thought Jeff Wilson, Jeff Wilson was great. And I think that he has to get the MVP from me today.
And he's somebody, you watch him run and just like run through people. His teammates react to him.
Yes.
Which is noticeable, right? And the 49ers have a few of those guys. Like when Debo Samuel's running through guys, teammates react. I think that's really tough on a defense. Like Debo Samuel, there is one where he just like trucked a dude going out of bounds, and then the microphone picks him up like cackling at the defenders and calling them weak. Like I think stuff like that just gives the 49ers sort of a mental edge over a lot of the teams they play. Because, you know, whether it's Kittle or Samuel or Ayuk and now Jeff Wilson, like they're just going to run through dudes. And like that makes it tough on a defense from a mental perspective, I think. So, yeah, good call on Jeff Wilson. I'm going to go Fred Warner. Thanks. Because Fred Warner was excellent, had an interception, is really like, I think if we were to do an MVP of the 49ers, team, is Fred Warner the Niners MVP so far?
I think he has to be.
Yeah, I think he might be. Just because of all, I mean,
he's been in the lineup every day.
He's the guy.
He's been excellent every day.
Yeah, he's been excellent. Their most consistent player every game, and he's probably the main reason why the defense is holding it together like it is.
Go ahead.
No, just I think he's the MVP because I had to pick somebody other than Jeff Wilson Jr. but he was excellent in an excellent defensive performance. Tony Romo made a whole lot of him covering Julian Edelman, which is, you know, covering Julian Edelman right now is different than it might have been when Julian Edelman's healthy and or younger. But Fred Warner was really good, and he's been good the whole year. And so I think he's a defensive MVP right now.
Who could have seen it pre-draft?
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. I got one. Anyways, what Fred Warner does in the middle of the defense, I think keys a lot of what they're able to do, because they don't just have a liability at linebacker. And if a receiver runs across his face, he can hang with him for long enough. I think it's such a massive advantage in the modern NFL to have a middle linebacker who has taken over a super vocal role and can cover all the positions he covers.
In, like, the 49ers don't have many plays where, or any really, like, where they're just in a bad call, right? Like, when they're in a bad play call or a bad play defensive design, in large part because Fred Warner is making all the checks to the line of scrimmage before each play. Right? Like, how often do we see just a guy running free for a huge game? Like, it doesn't happen. Like, usually somebody has to miss a tackle or a coverage or something. So schematically, the 49ers are really sound. And Fred Warner's the guy who's relaying the signals from Robert Saleh and getting everybody lined up before the play and reacting to audibles. You know, like that's a major, major thing and a key to the 49ers success that they've had so far this season. So Fred Warner is really good. Probably going to get that all pro nod that everybody's talking about now. I think he's famous enough and played in enough, you know, high profile games that he's reached that level where he's probably going to start getting Pro Bowl and All Pro nods as long as he's healthy for the foreseeable future.
I think that's probably right. We had Ian Williams on the show on Monday, and he said that Fred Warner, he's like, you never see him in the wrong spot. You never have to wonder where he is, and the coaching staff just knows they don't have to worry about him. And Ian Williams compared that to the way Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis both were. And yeah. I know that's a little bit hyperbolic because Fred Warner is not even halfway through his third season yet, but that seems to be the kind of trajectory he's on. I think he has a chance to be that good.
Yeah. He's different. He's a very different linebacker than those two.
Yeah, but
the overall impact, I think, is correct.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
You got anything else? That's all we got. Got anything else on this game? No.
No, go back and listen to the George Kittle pod if you haven't.
Yeah, really, really fun. And then find out the awesome conclusion of the Brooks Koepka saga.
Yes. Yes. Man, check my Twitter feed,
can
I guess.
Can we say after Brooks listen
to the pod.
Fan of the pod?
Ooh.
I think we can say that now.
Yeah, he's got to be.
This is Brooks Koepka's favorite 49ers podcast.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Brooks. Shout out to you. You know you're listening. Big fan. If you did happen to said George a set of clubs, if you threw an extra 3 wood in there, I'm in the market. Just saying.
This is what this podcast has come to. Just asking people who aren't listening to the podcast for things.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, it's hard out there when you need an expensive club, and you know, the money situation is what it is in California.
Candlestick Chronicles. Subscribe. Subscribe, rate, and review. Next pod drops Friday per usual. I believe Danny Kelly of The Ringer will be joining us to talk about his Seahawks and look ahead to Sunday's game. So make sure you're subscribed, rating, reviewing, and we will see you guys next time.